Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
This is Emily.
And this is Bridget.
And this is more Stuff Mom Never Told You. So this time we want to look a little bit closer at how the resistance will be commercialized.
The resistance will be commercialized. I like that. Everyone knows, and you can't really avoid it these days, protest and activism seems to be the hot new thing, right? Like, I've seen people with shirts that say things like, protest is the new brunch.
Yeah, that is so, so DC. Obviously, some DC person came up with that.
It's very DC. I actually had friends that they have like a brunch club every couple of weeks, and so they have it on Saturdays, and so now they have it like, enveloped into like protest,
right?
So like, we're gonna go to this protest and then brunch.
Wow. Well, here in DC, I feel like you can find a protest every weekend.
You can. It's a pretty crowded schedule.
Yeah.
You know, with protest and activism being sort of the hot new thing, I think inevitably we'll find places where commerce and activism seem to intersect.
Right.
So I think it's important when we're buying all these mugs and hats and shirts, etc., that we're spending our money in the right places and that we're not just going to, you know, give profits to people who aren't actually helping the resistance or helping a cause.
Right. And I think there's a lot of companies that are attempting and getting this so wrong. And of course, the first most flagrant fall on your face failure that we saw with this resistance marketing was Pepsi.
Pepsi.
As we open up a Coke here. No, just kidding. But Coca-Cola, call us. Wink.
We swear this is not sponsored
by Coca-Cola. No, it's not. But I just think, I mean, how delightfully pissed was the internet?
So
pissed. To just revel in what a failure the Pepsi commercial was.
So if you don't remember this commercial, it starts with Kendall Jenner. Is she the youngest Kardashian?
Question mark? I think it's Kylie.
Oh, yeah. It is Kylie. You're right. So she is at a photo shoot. She's a model.
A professional model doing her job.
She's got like a blonde wig and a, you know, face full of makeup. She sees that there is like a protest happening outside, and it seems to be like mostly full of like artists and like young people.
Other like token millennials.
Yeah, like basically what you would think of as if like you were like a casting manager and someone was like, get me some like edgy millennials
in
here. Like,
get that undercut Asian person with a haircut. It's like, drumming.
Yeah, and, it's like exactly what you think of as like edgy, hip millennials.
And it's like so obvious the diversity, you know, swing
so
that they went
obvious,
for.
So you're
like,
obvious.
Let's have one person from every corner
totally,
of the racial.
Totally.
Color
it's
spectrum.
Like a Benetton ad. It's,
yeah.
it's very clear. And so someone like walks by and sort of gives her like a nod of approval. Like,
come on, girl, break free from your chains.
You know you want to.
Your chains of oppression
yeah.
in the form of your blonde wig.
So she takes off her blonde wig, hands it to like
her assistant of color,
like you
shoves
it
in her face, and then like pushes her aside to join the protest.
So then she smears off her lipstick. It's very defiant.
Right.
She barges outside. She joins the protest. She somehow becomes like the leader of the protest, like, right, very quickly.
Well, she's a white woman.
Yeah,
she should be, yeah, at the front of the pack, right?
She, you know, barges in. She this protest is like very well thought out. They've got, you know, coolers full of ice with Pepsi. She grabs a Pepsi.
Have you ever been to a protest with a cooler full
coolers
of ice?
Full of ice? No, never.
Not part of it.
Not part of it. So Kendall hands the soda to this police officer who is standing in a line of other police officers.
Also white.
Also white. Kind of playing off of this really famous image that came out of a Black Lives Matter protest where there's this woman kind of standing in a flowing kind of gray dress. And her name is Aisha Evans. And she is sort of approaching the police officers in this very defiant sort of like defiant way. And they're clearly sort of having this kind of oversized reaction to,
right,
the fact that she's...
I mean, they're super militarized.
Right.
And what are they doing? Instead of her handing them a Pepsi, she's handing over her wrist.
Right.
To be, like, ziplocked by
a
police
officer. Totally. And so it's interesting that Pepsi's chosen to sort of play off of this, like...
Do you think they actually did that on purpose, by the way?
Oh.
Pepsi.
Play it on this image? I don't know. I mean, when you see the images side by side, it's difficult to say that they didn't.
I know. It's like almost identical.
It's almost identical. It really is. And so, you know, clearly.
Except for power, privilege, class, and
it's
race.
It's almost identical, but like in reverse, right? Like,
I mean, who let that go live?
I would love to be the, like, a fly on the wall in this, you know,
they were like,
ad
this
pitch
is
meeting
brilliant.
Where this,
this
happened.
This is brilliant.
So essentially, you know, they played on this very famous image, and not surprisingly, people on the internet lost their collective minds. People were tweeting about how awful it was, making fun of it. You know, what was really funny is that MLK's daughter actually tweeted, "If only Daddy had known about the power of Pepsi." Because again, like, this idea that handing a police officer a drink would be the thing that, like, you know,
solves police brutality.
Of course. I didn't know that Pepsi was so powerful.
And somehow Kendall Jenner is less threatening to a white police officer. I wonder
Imagine that.
Than Aisha Evans, this young woman,
right,
who, like, I mean, is treated like a criminal for being at a protest.
It's absurd. And I also think what's kind of funny about this ad is that I don't like that it, like, presents, you know, this person who wasn't even really involved as being the, like, you know, end-all,
right,
be-all solution.
But then you also can back up. There's a macro narrative behind it all about the Kardashians.
Oh, yes.
And race.
That needs to be an episode.
Okay.
I'll say I am obsessed with the Kardashians. I've seen every episode. I've watched every spinoff.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm a fan because I'm fascinated by their story. But I also think that when it comes to cultural appropriation,
that is, we have to do it. Yes. I also, fun fact, I own Kim Kardashian's book Selfie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's just a bunch of selfies.
And why, may I ask?
I got it as a gift.
Okay.
I also am like, it's a fascinating book. I mean,
I think she's fascinating.
I love selfies, and I love other people's selfies.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was reading some article or some review.
I love my own selfies.
Yeah. So
you don't love your own selfies.
I'm pro selfie. I don't take a lot of selfies, but I'm pro selfie.
Yeah. Okay.
There was a review in the New York Times by, I think it's Teju Cole, who said that, like, it was he ranked it as the best art book of, like, whatever year it came out.
Wow.
And I do think that, like, if Kim Kardashian was a man, that book would be considered, like, a high art book. Like, you know.
I think it's hard to not respect the empire they've built.
Totally.
But it's also, it's like there's this voyeuristic fascination.
Totally.
Anyway, so we'll have to definitely do a whole Kardashian episode.
Did you guys know you were tuning into a Kim Kardashian-related podcast?
Right. Well, I'm sure that stuff Mom never told you or me. So Kendall Jenner is, like, smack dab in the front and center of Pepsi's phenomenal fail. Like, what a facepalm moment. The internet freaks out. They pull the ad.
They pull the
ad.
Did
they apologize?
So what's funny is that they apologized, but in Pepsi's apology, and this was, like, such an interesting tidbit, they specifically apologized to Kendall Jenner for, quote, putting her in this situation. It's absurd.
What?
So it's like, they're like, we're sorry, this ad was clearly, like, we missed the mark. And a special apology to Kendall Jenner for putting her in this situation.
Wow.
And what's funny is that, like, because I read a lot of, like, trashy magazines and stuff, I remember before this ad even came out, reading a little blurb in, like, Us Weekly or something, where Kendall was describing the ad before it had ever come out and being like, I'm so excited that we can, you know.
Well, creative director and talent are two different roles.
True.
And so I think, first of all, they missed the mark in the apology.
Yeah.
They should not have apologized to Kendall Jenner publicly.
For sure.
They should have maybe done that privately. I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But I think it's your job as talent to be mindful of who you choose to work with and what the big picture is.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, part of me even wonders, like, in that situation, let's say that Kendall was like, something about this ad doesn't feel right to me. And she had spoken up and voiced that. Like, what does that look like?
Well, you know, Nicki Minaj actually has a really great example of being assertive in that kind of a setting that I actually draw from in all of my assertive communication.
Is it that interview?
Training. It's from her E! True Hollywood Story. Yes. But, like, here's the thing about that interview. She pulled this section off of it. So you have to kind of, you know, go to the recesses of the internet to find this Vimeo version of it that was created by an art student in New York City. I think it's NYT or something, NYIT. I'm not sure what the college is, but I've been in touch with her to get her permission to use her video version that's actually just about the text. Mm-hmm. So it's like a phonetic typography version of Nicki Minaj saying, you know what? If there's a $50 clothes budget, I am going to leave. I am going to be assertive. Now, in that instance, it's about budget. It's about quality. But she models exactly the kind of behavior you have to exhibit to draw boundaries for yourself and say, here's the kind of respect I expect. Here's how I condition others to treat me the way I deserve to be treated.
I love it.
And I think those same skills can be applied to causes. You know what I mean? Those same skills can be applied to, I'm not going to be a part of this. This is a PR disaster waiting to happen.
I honestly feel like there needs to be a case study on Nicki Minaj because
there's an
amazing interview where the interviewer basically asks her about this like beef between her then boyfriend, who was also a rapper, whose name I cannot remember, and another rapper. And the interviewer is like, do you feel like, you know, drama follows you? And she was like, what does two grown men having drama have to do with me? Like I'm an artist and I'm a person and I'm my own person. Like, why would you even bring that up in an interview? So I really do feel like she is someone who is constantly,
I love her,
you know, reaffirming,
obviously,
yeah, friend of the show, right? Nikki, call us.
Can we do an episode on Nikki,
please?
Yeah, okay, so we'll come back to that. So I think the point here is that Pepsi, Coke, wherever we spend our dollars, however we reward or don't reward companies and hold them accountable, we as consumers have massive power here. We have massive influence. And especially in the age of social media, where everybody like joyfully complained, joyfully trashed Pepsi for their mistake, we have really more power as consumers to show companies what kind of messaging we do and do not approve of. And in the age of resisting Trump, in that sort of backlash against the feeling of being under attack for minorities and women and different groups of all kinds, I think we can take that power into our hands and harness it.
Totally. And I also, and we'll talk a bit more about this going forward, but I think it's important to lift up that, like, it doesn't have to be all bad, right?
Right.
Like, we can reward companies who do the right thing with praise, right?
Exactly.
Like, we can, if a company makes a good choice, like, a lot of companies were making a big show of giving money to the ACLU. And so, like, you know, if you want to, as consumers, it's part of it is saying, like, I'm not going to give my money to XYZ company because they fund crappy things.
Right.
And also saying everyone should go out and buy XYZ brand because they're giving money. And
being an ambassador for
exactly.
Them,
yeah. I know here in D.C., during the weekend of the inauguration, when so many people were pouring into D.C. to attend protests, a lot of it all, because it's D.C., it always comes back to brunch. But a lot of local restaurants were saying, like, if you come for brunch on inauguration weekend, X amount of the proceeds are going to go to, the ACLU. And it's like, you really did get to feel like by going out to eat and spending money at your favorite restaurant and buying a few drinks that you were actually, helping to support the cause.
And it's good for business.
Exactly.
Businesses have seen this work for them, so they're doing more of it. And it's also interesting for us as consumers to see this as a new form of activism.
Everybody wins.
Now, when we come back from this quick break, we're going to talk about a few companies that are doing this right. But first, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
So, Bridget, it's not all bad news, right?
It's not all bad. It seems very bad when you think about Pepsi.
Pulling a Pepsi should be a new, like, phrase that use to judge companies trying to commercialize the resistance. I'm excited to say that there's a great example. There's a couple great examples out there, particularly around key phrases that have been capitalized on very quickly. So when "nasty woman" was a comment leveled by Donald Trump against Hillary Clinton in a debate, all the t-shirt companies, right, all the Etsy creators, all the independent peeps, and, you know, it seems like everywhere you go on the internet, all of a sudden I'm getting hit with, like, Facebook ads saying, you should buy this nasty woman shirt.
The algorithm knows you're a nasty woman.
They're like, yeah, this woman is what? Urban dwelling, you know, between 25 and 35, female. I'm going to market the hell out of this.
Yeah, totally. And so, you know, with a lot of it's important to say that with a lot of these sort of feministy, empowering slogans that take off onto mugs and t-shirts and stuff, not all of them do something good in terms of, like, giving proceeds to an organization or a cause. But the creator of what you might think of as, like, the iconic nasty woman shirt, which is the phrase "nasty woman" in a heart, like a red heart.
Right. Google Ghost.
Yeah. So that was actually a kind of a huge win.
Yeah.
So
they raised $130,000 for Planned Parenthood right off of the bat on that shirt. And I'm sure it's trickled in over time as well.
Totally.
So between the nasty woman shirt's proceeds and "Nevertheless, She Persisted," which was the phrase that came about when, actually? I'm, like, blanking on that. Is it Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren was told that she could not...
Oh, she couldn't speak on the Senate floor.
Correct.
And it was the speaker or somebody, or the minority leader who said she was told... Oh, it was the majority leader who shut her down, McConnell.
Mitch McConnell basically was like, I made her stop because she was warned...
She was given a fair warning, but nevertheless, she persisted. And we were like,
There's another kind of interesting tidbit about a bunch of women who actually, you know, got that phrase tattooed on them.
I know, 100 plus women in Minneapolis.
Right. And
that's
so
insane.
In a million years, if you were like like a progressive woman, would you ever think that you'd be getting a Mitch McConnell quote tattooed on you?
OMG, please, Sminty listeners, if you have a resistance related tattoo, we have to see it
on Instagram.
Please shoot us an Instagram at @StuffMomNeverToldYou on Insta. But another thing to note about "Nevertheless, She Persisted," that shirt, is that Barney's is also selling a shirt for $195 a pop, a t-shirt.
What a steal. I mean, that's such a good bargain.
Right? I know. It's like the one percenter resistance. Like, who is that marketed to? You know what I mean?
I have no idea.
And then it's like Sheryl Crow. Like,
right, you know what I mean?
But of course, the interesting thing is, where is that profit going to?
I mean,
presumably Barney's.
I mean, you know, when you go to the site, the shirt looks amazing. It's like a great shirt.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't say, you know, money goes to Planned Parenthood, ACLU, whatever.
Yeah, you got to look closely and read between the lines.
Totally.
There.
And I don't want people to think that I'm saying, like, don't buy that nasty woman shirt or whatever.
Or don't create. There are Etsy creators, I'm sure, listening to this.
Totally.
Who are like, But I want to create these shirts. If I'm going to design something to sell, might as well design for the resistance?
Totally.
You know what I mean? The challenge is, if you are a creator, if you are an independent seller and you are creating cool stuff, shout out to all the designers out there.
Shout out.
That is hard to do. I've been struggling. If anyone wants to help me make some cool swag, let me know. Because it really does take a lot of work.
But
think about proceeds going to the organizations you want to support. And I should really do more of that at Boss Stop.
Are you cashing in on the resistance?
Well, I'm resistant of that.
Right.
Because I feel like it's appropriating something. I feel like, you know, we saw a dramatic downturn, actually, after the inauguration, because our message is about empowerment and tools and tactics for taking your career into your own hands and your own power. But people weren't actually feeling that, like, ready to navigate career transition after January. People were depressed. Our audience was depressed.
Right.
And whereas they're signing up for how to run for office trainings, they weren't signing up for our trainings.
Interesting.
And so we had a moment with our team when we were thinking, and my board saying, okay, should we change our marketing in the age of Trump? Should I make Bossed Up, like, positioned as an answer to the, like, demise of hope and change? And I can't say that we've resolved that issue, because I think there are some tweaks we could make, but mm-hmm. I don't feel good as a business owner, like, cashing in.
Right.
Even though we're not, you know, we're not selling t-shirts.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of how people are resisting Trump, I think it's different for everybody. For some, that might mean, like, now is the time to take my career into my own hands.
True.
I've always wanted to, like, start this business.
Yeah.
You know, the world
is
on fire. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so I do think. But
I think there was an early hunkering down that happened.
Yes.
And that we are coming out of that hunkering.
I agree.
And thank God, because I can't hunker anymore.
You're all hunkered out.
I'm hunkered down. I'm hunkered out. But I also think it's in stark contrast to, for instance, another really gross example here, which is Vogue's spread, like their resistancy photo spread.
Oh, my God.
That featured a Marc Jacobs safety pin, which is like I don't think it really took off, but it was that symbol.
It took off it was like hot for a minute.
Like,
basically, this idea that, like, you know, if I think after Brexit, people started wearing
in the UK.
Yes. So after the Brexit vote, people started wearing safety pins to
better together.
Better together.
We're better together.
To symbolize, like, hey, I didn't vote for this. Like, don't lump me in. And so that idea sort of spread here in the States, where people started wearing safety pins to be like, I didn't vote for Trump. I am a designated, like,
please don't blame me,
quote unquote, safe person.
Oh, wow.
So, like, really, it was supposed to be, like, a way to show that, like,
I'm with you.
Yeah. And so I will say that, like, as someone who has lots and lots of Facebook friends who are very sort of, like, progressive people, I saw so many people sort of, like, being into this. And I just want to say, like, if you were into it, I am not coming for you or, like, bashing you.
Right.
I think it was, like, very well-intentioned. But I think what I think is so interesting about the safety pin thing, and why for me it just, like, was not something I liked or found, you know, empowering at all. Yeah,
I didn't appreciate it. It's like, put yourself out there.
Right. Because, like,
if you're going to, it's halfway.
Exactly. And I think that, like, I read this really interesting article that I think nailed the point, which is that, like, as people of color, we are used to getting lumped in mm-hmm. with, like, the group always. And so, you know, if you're a black person, you're very, very used to people being like, well, all black people are XYZ. And, like, you just have to accept that. That's part of being a person of color.
Right.
And I think that for a lot of white people, it was the first time that they had to confront this idea of, like, people are going to look at me and think I voted for Trump and I didn't. And, like, wanting to do something to make it clear, like, no, I am not, like, white person who voted for Trump. I didn't vote for him. Right.
I'm like, a nice white person.
Exactly. And so I think that, like,
that's a great
that
point.
I could never really articulate it until I read this article that, like, laid it out, where it's like, we as people of color deal with this every day, all the time. And that, like, for the first time, or maybe not the first time, but, like, at a time where, you know, white people were actively wanting to be seen as, like, good white people, quote unquote.
It's like a visible white guilt expression.
Exactly. Wow. And so it was already like not something I loved. But then the Vogue spread of like
a $350 safety pin designed by Marc Jacobs.
Where do I even start? So basically, Vogue had an entire spread that's like, here's how you can, you know, you could accessorize your, you know, resistance with our like
high fashion resistance. Ugh.
And I just think it's things like that where it's like, if I could almost be okay with that if like the proceeds went someplace good, or I felt like, you know, when you buy that safety pin, you're contributing to something good financially or supporting something good, but you're not.
Right. And you know what's in the past sort of a surefire way that I've been able as a consumer to be more careful with that is through the campaigns that I've supported.
Right.
So what's cool is that these high fashion designers typically get roped into presidential campaigns, and HRC's store was on fire.
Yes.
Her store was like
amazing. She actually did have Marc Jacobs
design. Yeah, exactly. And you know what? All of the proceeds go to the campaign.
Yes.
So when you want to buy some high fashion resistance gear, I mean, it's not presidential season yet, but remember that you can always purchase through the official campaign that you support through their online store. And I have tons of cool swag from Obama days, especially.
Like, I have a lot. I mean, like, and it doesn't even have to necessarily be, you know, attached to some sort of to an electoral campaign. Like, plenty of campaigns, like advocacy campaigns.
Right.
I have some really cool ACLU stuff.
Oh, good point. I love that that's becoming more of a thing that activists have to do.
Definitely.
So, all right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk through what we as consumers can do in the midst of this sort of minefield of resistance wear and resistance consumer culture to be better. Sound good?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
All right, Bridget, what can we do about this?
So it's not all doom and gloom. You know, as we said, there are plenty of ways that we can be savvy consumers and sort of really know where our money is going. And I mean, I actually think the idea that people can feel like they're doing some sort of activism by spending money, I think that's kind of empowering. I also think that people,
we're well-practiced online shoppers anyway.
True. You're already going to buy crap.
That's
you may
a hobby
as well.
At this point.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think, like, for people like my mom, who, like, probably will not be going to a protest anytime soon, she can feel good when she goes to, you know, buy XYZ thing and they give the money someplace good.
So I think
knowing where your money goes is really key. And then also really thinking through, you know, intentional ways that people are using commerce to sort of make a statement, like Grab Your Wallet, that really encouraged consumers to know which products were,
nasty. Like, not bad. Making a Kate. Like, not a good kind of nasty.
Right.
Like Walmart selling All Lives Matter shirts right next to their Black Lives Matter shirts.
Yes.
And they're, what is it, Blue Lives Matter?
Blue Lives Matter,
I don't even know
All
what that
Lives
is.
Matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it's a company that, you know, isn't doing it, that you should not be spending money on if you're someone who is actively involved in, like, the resistance, you know.
Right.
So really knowing kind of where your money is going and making intentional purchasing decisions based on that.
I want to shout out to grabyourwallet.org, which you can go to, and it's an active spreadsheet that's constantly being updated. And they are, as organizers, in communication with companies that are not doing it right to give them an opportunity to get put on the nice list. So it's like a naughty list, nice list in real time.
Totally.
That I think is a good thing because they're actually keeping in communication with the companies.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, I love the model of kind of love it, shove it, where it's like you can shout out companies that are doing the right thing and tell all your friends, right?
Maybe don't Google love it, shove it.
Yeah, that probably will...
It's not
going to
find the right
result
for you.
But yeah, so it's not all just scolding companies that are doing it wrong, but it's also shouting out companies that are doing it right.
Right, which I really, really appreciate. And then the other thing I want to make mention of is, first of all, not everybody lives in Washington, D.C., where you can protest and brunch every weekend. So for those of us who are looking for an opportunity to be engaged, I want to encourage us to not see consumerism as the only path forward.
Totally.
To me, it feels kind of, it reminds me of clicktivism, which is like when we were all obsessed with signatures and petitions, like online petitions, which our industry, like the political industry that we come from, are super into it because it's a list building, like moneymaker. But I'm here to say that, you know, signing a petition online and buying a Nevertheless She Persisted shirt is not sufficient. I think back to, I'm such a constitutional geek that I think of the sort of quote, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Mm. I think that's a Locke quote. Somebody correct me on
that. That's funny because my mom used to always, she modified that quote and said, like, the cost of a clean house is constant vigilance. And
oh,
she would
no!
make us, she would say that all the time to justify making us, like,
Mama
get up
Todd.
And do chores.
Mama Todd. She's evoking our nation's history to carry us forth to a cleaner future. She's got my vote. But really, like, eternal vigilance doesn't mean buy some stuff and feel like you can sleep at night. I think we have to be more engaged. I think we have to see what's happening in our communities, whether you live in Washington, D.C. or, you know, the rural countryside of America. It's not about, like, starting your own thing. It's about finding the organizations on a community level that are doing the work you believe in and get your butt to a volunteer role. Like, get out there. Get, you know, it matters to show up and protest whenever and however you can. Some people, we should do a whole podcast on women in protest.
Totally.
Some people really loathe protesting, but solidarity is not limited to clicktivism.
Totally. And I just want to lift up something else that you said, which is that, you know, a lot of people, and this is something that, like, is a personal pet peeve of mine as a longtime organizer. A lot of people, basically, I feel like when Trump got elected after the inauguration, it was like January 1 where everybody's in the gym because it's like their New Year's resolution to go to the gym. And like they all tried to be personal trainers, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of people who have not really been in the movement for a long time, sort of like now that like the resistance is like the hot thing, thinking they can like start an organization. I want to empower folks to like do what feels right, but like there are probably people doing the work who like
who've been doing it,
who have been doing it, and like, you know, you, I think it's important to think through like do I feel like I'm the right person to sort of like be the face of this thing, or are there people already doing that work? That's like a personal pet peeve of mine where like,
oh, it's not personal.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Cause I feel like there are a lot of people now who are like, oh, like the hot new thing is like running training for people to run for office. And it's like, I used to work in that space and you know what? It's really hard.
Yeah.
And, like getting people to run for office takes more than like a week long seminar in a hotel lobby or whatever. It's a lot of like work that goes into it.
You know who I was sort of relieved to hear say some good things about this was Glennon Doyle Melton, who is this woman in the professional development or spiritual guru type space. I have to be honest, I've never been very, I haven't paid a lot of attention to her until I saw her make this really powerful statement and use her platform. Even, you know, as a white woman, she used in the media, she used her platform to send a really powerful message specifically to white women about, listen, we need to make our feminism intersectional or it's not feminism at all. And in that quote, she actually said, what we need to remember is that this is just a touch of the pain that so many marginalized people in this country have been feeling for ages, for Black people and brown people and trans people and gay people and Muslim people and Native Americans and poor people. She says, what sucks is that it took us being personally affected, and she means us, like white women,
right,
to finally show up. We cannot show up for the movement and say, here we are, until we say, we're so damn sorry it took us so long. So it's about like not showing up and saying, here we are, I'm going to start a thing.
Right.
Necessarily. It's like, how can we be of support to communities who've been in their own resistance before it was like the plurality or majority of us?
Totally. And I think that like, that's completely my, my mindset about this kind of work is that, you know, oppression is linked, right? Like, it might not be my personal struggle, but you know, it's if you're not able to show up for other people where they're at and what issues they're facing, and you can only really face them when it's like your specific pet issue, you know? And again, like I think we said this in an earlier episode. Of course, we all have blind spots. I have my own blind spots where I don't remember what the issue was, but I was organizing some event and someone was like, oh, will the event be accessible for folks with disabilities? And I was like, oh, it's not. And I didn't even think about that. Right. And so
we have a checklist now.
Okay.
Too. So like, we do a lot of event planning and we don't always get it right at my company. So it's like, how can we not just count on our individual blind spots being corrected, which is a huge part of it, but how can we then institute systems for preventing blind spots from, you know, systemically being a part of how you do what you do?
Right.
So it's tricky.
Tricky, and we don't always get it right, but we're getting better together.
Aw, the more you know. I love it. So many lovely bumper stickers are necessary in the age of the resistance. So moving forward, I think for all of us to be woke consumers, it requires doing our due diligence. It requires doing more than just buying and putting something in the cart online. And it requires listening to one another about not only how can we show up as white women, I'm talking white women especially, and lead something, but how about listen to what else is being done already, who's been in this movement for a long time, and how can we support their work?
Totally.
And then for entrepreneurs, for my creatives out there, my side hustlers, and for me, I'm like having a moment of realization here, like how can we be more institutionalized about supporting those organizations like the ACLU and Planned Parenthood who've been doing the work for a long time? Because I think consumers also appreciate that. So I know there's a billion things for business owners to think about, but let's add this one to the priority list.
Have to.
Love it. Cool. So, all right, y'all, we want to hear from you. How are you resisting? How does consumer resistance fit into your smorgasbord of activism right now? And does it?
If there's a company out there that's doing it super, super right, let us know. If there's a company out there that is got your blood boiling because they're doing it
wrong.
They're pulling a Pepsi. They're doing it super wrong.
Pepsi's going to hate that.
And again, if you've got a resistance-related tattoo, let us know.
We want to see
it. We want to see it. So you can tag us in your pictures on Insta, Stuff Mom Never Told You on Instagram. You can tweet at us at MomStuffPodcast on Twitter, or send us a good old-fashioned email at MomStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands. Not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.